Well, good morning. Have you ever read something that you wish you wrote? Well, this has my name on it at the front, but I didn't write it. Okay, I submitted it, but I wish I had written it. But just so that you will know, I didn't write that. I wish I had, because I liked the sentiments of it. But just so that you'll know, so that doesn't go out with my name as the author of it, then. You can write submitted by if it gets passed on anywhere. About 30 years ago, and whenever somebody used to say that when I was a kid, I thought, man, this guy's got one foot in the grave and one on a banana peel when you can talk about what happened 30 years ago. A fellow by the name of Alonzo Welch, who was the founder of Sunnybrook Children's Home, north of Jackson, Mississippi, stood before an audience in which I was a member, and he began his talk with these words. He said, "I stand before you as a man who has more years behind me than I have ahead of me." And when he said that, for some reason it really struck me, and I thought, you know, that's neat. Someday I'm going to be able to say that. And I can now tell you that it's not as much fun as I thought it was going to be. But four kids and three elderships and 35 years of preaching and one wife later, I've learned a few things. And one of the things, it's not new because somebody said it a long, long time ago, but it takes me a long time to learn some things that others learn quickly. But I finally come to realize and acknowledge that God truly does use the weak, the foolish, the lowly, the despised things of this world to accomplish His purpose. And I read that. Paul wrote it a long time ago in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And I knew it was true, but I didn't really know how true it was until I got to live life a little while. And I look back at the times that I just thought that, you know, I was on top of everything and I had all this going for me and I had these plans and I launched out into this thing, whatever it may have been, and this thing didn't work. And I just knew it was going to. And I gave it everything that I have, and it just didn't work. But God, when He's in control of our lives, He has quite often something different in mind than we do. And if we'll allow Him to guide us, then we learn that God uses not necessarily our strengths, even though there's sometimes He uses those, and I like those times, but more often He uses our weaknesses to accomplish His purpose. And those times are really humbling, because I don't like for people to know my weaknesses. And when God shines in those things, then people obviously know those weaknesses. Mike was a good friend, is a good friend. He was fresh out of the Green Berets. And let that impress you some. He had the Leroy Brown complex. You know what that is, huh? Big bad Leroy Brown. And as a matter of fact, he was pretty bad. And he would be happy to demonstrate that to you if you wanted him to. But he had recently been converted to the Lord. And he had lots of changes to make in his life. He came to School of Preaching. We became friends. We were classmates. And we became really close friends. When he graduated, when we both graduated, then just prior to that, we had lots of talks. And he said, "I'm not going to be a stateside preacher. I'm going to be a missionary." And so he went to the Caribbean. And he talked about why he didn't want to be a stateside preacher. He said, "Because I don't want to wipe snotty noses every day. That's not my job." Several years passed, and Mike returned from the mission field. He had done a really good job. There were some congregations that are still there today that he had been instrumental in helping begin. And he came by to see me and stayed with me for a couple of days. And we were sitting talking together, and he said, "Do you remember what I said to you before I left?" I didn't have a clue what he was talking about, so he reminded me about his statement about why he was not going to be a stateside preacher. And then he said, "The main reason that I took the time and drove a long distance to come to see you was because I needed to tell you that I was wrong. That it is my job to wipe snotty noses." And I wouldn't have said it quite that way, and probably from the look on your faces, you probably wouldn't have either. But then most of us wouldn't turn over a rotten log and eat everything that crawled out from under it to prove how bad we were either. And so you probably wouldn't do things just like Mike did, and neither would I. Serving others, call it whatever you want to, is the beating heart. It's the lifeblood of the life to which Christ calls us. The really appealing thing about Jesus to the common masses was that he was the king of the universe who voluntarily became a servant. And when you know that, how can you not follow him? I mean, he did the dirty, nasty things. He did the things that most people were too good to do, the foot washing kind of things. And it wasn't done for show. And so how can you not follow someone like that? Someone who didn't consider it robbery to leave the throne room of God, equality with God, and to become servant to servants. He summarized his whole earthly life by saying the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Matthew chapter 20, verse 28. And he taught it over and over and over again, didn't he? And it was in everything that he said, and it was in everything that he did, this thing about serving others. In Matthew chapter 23, verse 8 through 11, he'll say, "Don't be called," to his disciples, "don't be called master. Don't be called teacher. Don't be called father, because you're not. There's only one of each of those, and it's not you. The greatest among you," he concluded, "will be your servant." And if anybody really wants to be first, he said, he will voluntarily become the very last one in line. He taught it in his parables, he taught it in his stories. When you stop and think about the story of the rich man and Lazarus, and you boil it down to, what is the point? The point is, a rich man would like to have that poor man laying at his gate that he despised. He would like to have one more chance to serve him. The story, and we could just name story after story after story, couldn't we? The parable of the Good Samaritan, what's the point? It's all about service, isn't it? And it's really not about anything else. Serving others is the key to kingdom life. It's the key to everything about pleasing God. And just think with me a moment how that serving others is the key to evangelism. It's not about programs. It's not about having something that everybody in the community wants to come to a rock concert. It's not about those things. I'm not saying they won't come. But I'm saying to develop in us and to become the kind of people that God wants us to be and to make true disciples, then it's about serving others. Paul will say in 1 Corinthians 9:19, "I make myself a servant to everyone to win as many as possible." You want to win as many as possible? He just tells us how to do it. Learn how to serve. Ephesians 4:11 through 16 teaches that the primary function of church leaders is to equip the saints for what? for serving. To teach us how to serve. How many of us want to know how to serve? The same passage says that serving or ministering is the avenue not only for physical growth, but for spiritual growth. The church is built up, it's unified, it's matured through serving others. Galatians 5:13, the purpose for Christian freedom. He says, don't use your freedom to indulge your sinful nature, but rather use it for what? To serve others in love. Pure religion and undefiled before God is what? Serving the fatherless and the widows. Everything about the church, everything about the gospel, everything about pleasing God is based in serving others. The reason that Jesus and his teachings and his followings and his church made such an incredible impact on an arrogant, violent Roman world is because he and his followers served others. Even their enemies. Overcome evil with good. Do good to them that hate you. How does the world view service? Well, we know. I mean, when there's an opportunity to serve, you don't have to fight folks off, do you? When there's an opportunity to rule, yeah, you do. The line gets long. God truly does use the weak and the foolish and the lowly and the despised things of this world to bring about the results that he wants in this world, in our lives, and in the church. Question. If that's true, and it is, and if we know that, and we do, then why don't we serve? Well, I'll give you two suggestions about why so many of us are so reluctant to serve. Because it takes two things to be a true servant. The first one is you must love others, and not as a ploy to manipulate them to do something. You must truly love others. And for some of us, that doesn't come very natural. There are some people that seem to love people, and they love to be around people, they love to help people, and there are others that don't seem, that doesn't seem to be such a natural thing. We have little problem in sacrificing ourselves for our family and our friends, and we'll unselfishly serve them whenever the opportunity is there, and if the opportunity is not there, we'll make the opportunity, won't we? But we view others outside our circle of family and friends in terms of deserving. And can't you hear that rich man when he had to pass by Lazarus at his gate talking about, you know, he's just getting what he deserved. It's his fault that he's that way. If he'd get up and work, and if he hadn't been lazy or hadn't been this or whatever, then he wouldn't be in this shape. And he just moved on. Remember, Jesus washed Judas' feet. Are you impressed with that? That knocks me off my feet. I can see him washing Peter's feet and John's feet. I mean, John, he wanted to stick up under Jesus' armpit all the time, didn't he? Every time Jesus turned around, John was there. It's easy to love John. But how about a sorry, no good, low down traitor? And you knew he was going to be a traitor. Would you wash his feet? If you're not serving others, you're not following Christ. It's just that simple. And then the second thing is, in order to voluntarily serve others, we have to be secure in our own position. And I have a passage I'd like for you to turn to just quickly, John chapter 13, that we read just a little bit earlier, because there's something I want you to see there, and you might want to make a little note there. You know the context. The context was the Last Supper, and the setting was, the premise of what's about to happen is in verse 1, he showed them now the full extent of his love. And so what you're about to see and discover is the key to how Jesus could love and serve his friends and his enemies. Here's the key. There are three things, and it's really interesting how John puts this in here. He says, it was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. And then he puts a really strange verse in here. The evening meal was being served, no problem there. The devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus, so we know that this thing was in the works. But now look at this next verse. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. And verse 4 starts out with what word? So. And when you see so, it's kind of like the word therefore. It means because of what just was said. And so verse 3 is summarized in verse 4. So there's a conclusion drawn in verse 4. That wraps up verse 3. And there's three things in verse 3 that enabled that soul. He got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, and started washing feet. Why did he do that? Well, the answer is in verse 3. And he gives three things. And those are three things that you're going to have to know about yourself so that the soul can be true about you, so that you can serve others. And have the right attitude about doing it. And want to serve others. And the first thing is, he knew what power he had at his disposal. He wasn't operating under his own power. Even he. You remember what he said? I didn't come to do my will, but the will of him who sent me. He knew where his power came from, first of all. Secondly, he knew what his mission was. He came from God. And it doesn't just tell you, that phrase doesn't just tell you that he came from heaven, that he was equal from God, equal to God, but the implication is to come from someone means you have been commissioned. He knew what he was about in this world. He knew what his mission was. And folks, I'm going to say this, and I hope it doesn't offend anybody, but if there's ever been a time when the church is wobbling about what its mission is, it may be now. There's so many things going on in the religious world today that we may be in danger of losing sight of what we're supposed to be about. And as a result of that, we're good people and we love to be together, and there are certain things that we do really well, but we don't have this one distinct sense of mission. We don't get up in the morning knowing what we're supposed to accomplish today for the Lord. But Jesus did. He never, ever lost sight of that mission. He came from God, and coming from God means he sent him into the world to accomplish something. And he never lost sight of it for a moment in his life. And then it says he knew he was returning to God. And Mike said that a few moments ago, how incredible it is to know that we're saved. It makes a difference in our life, doesn't it? But you see, if you don't have that confidence in your life, you can't serve. Only people who are truly confident can truly serve, particularly your enemies. You got to have it together in here to be able to consistently serve others, to get down on your knees and do the dirty, nasty stuff. You got to have it right in here. And it's not a lack of a good self-image. It is having a good self-image, if you will, that allows a person to truly be a consistent servant to others. And only when we have this total confidence that we're not operating in our own power, that we're operating in God's power, and we have this clear sense of mission, and we have this confidence about our future, will we humble ourselves consistently and serve others. And you know what that also does? That defines three things that we need to be preaching and teaching about. Go back and think about those things. That's what our preaching and teaching needs to center around, those things, if we're going to really be servants. Because you see, serving is not very exciting. And it takes a while in life to learn that it truly is more blessed to give than to receive. And we as preachers are notoriously looking for excitement and exciting things. And sooner or later, we learned that Monday morning is Monday morning all over the world. Does that make any sense? Do you understand what I'm saying with that? It's not always exciting. Friday afternoon and Saturday and Sundays, they're pretty exciting. Monday morning, not so exciting, is it? But Monday morning is Monday morning all over the world. And just changing your environment doesn't change the fact that sooner or later, there's work to be done. And the Lord has given us that responsibility. And we also learned that the grass is greener where you fertilize it. And the sack of Christian fertilizer has a label on it, and it is written, service to others. And that's how you make the field green. And that's how you make the church grow, and that's how you grow personally in your own personal process, maturation process as a Christian. True growth can only happen through service. And you'll never, ever, ever be more like Jesus than when nobody else knows it. You serve and you keep on serving. Let's stand and sing.